Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Sally O'Cordy, and welcome to Public Advocate. This is about the most serious show I may ever conduct, and that's saying a lot because I have interviewed over 300 parents of vaccine-injured children. So I don't really have a merry show. I have a very serious show, but today I will be interviewing Kathy Sinnott, former member of the European Parliament for Ireland, for the fifth time. I am interviewing her about the referendum that was voted on, and the government had said this is a good thing and promoted it as a good thing. It is a referendum on the rights of the child, which removes rights from children and families and leads to child stealing, as it has elsewhere in the UK and in Canada. So I'm very concerned that this woman's case has prevailed, and I look forward to her dialing into the show. As soon as she does, I will pick her up. The second issue that we are confronting here in New York City is that there is a mandate for the flu vaccine for children 6 months through 5 years to attend daycare through kindergarten, daycare and preschool. So I know that this is a deadly vaccine and 30 times as much for the babies, because one shot to a 6-pound infant is 30, you would have to get 30 shots on one day if you were a 180-pound adult to equal that. So I'm very concerned about our children. I know that they will die, and it will not be reported for years. These death statistics do not come out right away. So this was passed under Mayor Bloomberg, and since Mayor de Blasio has taken office, his first goal was to triple pre-K or triple preschool. So 3 times as many children may be receiving this dangerous and deadly flu vaccine. So the lady who's coming on next after Kathy Sinnott will be reporting about a child of 3 who just died from the flu mist. Okay, I'm picking up. Is this Kathy Sinnott?
Hi, Sally.
Oh.
Hi, can you hear me?
This is, yes, I hear you very well, thank you. This is our fifth interview, and I am eager to hear what has transpired regarding the Supreme Court and the child referendum.
Okay, as you know, you followed it all the way, the whole process through the High Court, the double case, well, actually the triple case. We first had to apply for leave to petition the referendum, which we got. Then we had to petition the referendum, which we lost. And then we had to take a constitutional case against the law that makes it impossible to successfully petition. So we lost that as well. And the good thing about losing in the High Court, I mean, obviously it would have been lovely to win, but the good thing was that we lost so completely that the judge really left himself wide open, because he had to ignore all of the elephants in the room, all of our arguments in order to have us lose. The biggest elephant in the room is that the government had been convicted of cheating in the referendum by the Supreme Court. So, of course, now that it's gone to the very same Supreme Court, some of the same judges who convicted the government of cheating in the referendum, they are in a position where they can't say that's not serious. And it's been argued, our side has been argued very well. I have to say I think the government side has been argued very poorly, not because they didn't pick a very expensive barrister, but because they have no argument. You know, can you imagine doing a crime and then getting up there and saying there should be no consequences, that, you know, this shouldn't change anything, we should be allowed to do this, you know, it's not a very nice thing to have to argue. So we've been to, well, it was supposed to be 4 days in the Supreme Court. It wound up being 5 days in the Supreme Court. And the arguments were made very well. We had seven judges. And just to tell you, the first time ever in the history of the Irish state when they had seven judges in the Supreme Court was for my son's case back in the year 2001. That because it was a very, very important landmark decision. Landmark case. And then they very seldom use seven judges again, but they're using seven judges on this rather than three or five. And so the judges have been asking very interesting, very telling questions. They, you know, are really probing very hard. And we are very, very encouraged. Obviously, we don't know what their judgment will be, but we're very, very hopeful. Now, if their judgment is that the results in the referendum is tainted, then there will have to be a rerun. And if their judgment is that they can't tell, and therefore the Referendum Act is unconstitutional because it doesn't protect the citizens, well then. That obviously will also have implications for the referendum, and it will have implications for the law itself, that the referendum act changed. So that's where we're at. I'm hoping that we're going to get a second chance on children's rights. I'm hoping that we will be able to run it again, and I'm really hoping that people have, at this stage, learned a lesson. I'm not sure that people still understand the issue, but since then, we've had a bill before the Irish Parliament called the Child and Family Relationship Bill, and there's a lot of stuff in that bill, but the basic premise of the bill is that it's not nature, it's not God that decides who is going to be the parents of a child and who the, you know, who this child is going to be taken care of. By, but that it's the state decides who gets to be any child's parent, and that it has nothing to do with the biological realities of that child. And of course, it's very much based on the forced adoption and everything that they're counting on getting when they get the children's rights. So it's very interesting because their time frame has been knocked out because of our challenge. Their, you know, their agenda of taking over children and childhood, you know, basically privatization, government control, and then farming out to privatizing children and childhood. They're going ahead with some of the, you know, doing the pre-work on laws that were supposed to come after the children's rights referendum. So they're kind of caught because they've got this, you know, breakneck, agenda they want to get in the life of this government, you know, bring in abortion, control children, obviously they're bringing in all kinds of things, so water privatization, all sorts of things. And, of course, it's also tied in with vaccination in that we were already told that if they have children's rights, if we pass this amendment, we've already been told that then the government can see that every child is protected medically. So, you know, oh, absolutely. I mean, that's exactly what all of this is, you know, ramifications of children's rights is that the state has the right to dictate and to, as I say, farm children out to whomever they want to give them to. And, it's and therefore control the future. And this includes things like your mandatory vaccination. At the moment in Ireland, a parent has the choice. And, you know, there's a lot of pressure, there's a lot of publicity, but at the end of the day, the parents can say no for their children. That will only last as long as the Constitution doesn't contain the children's rights, which says it's the state that decides the best interest of every child. So I have great sympathy for you. there in New York with your compulsory flu vaccine. And of course, I'm sure your listeners have been well advised that the flu vaccine contains the thimerosal, the mercury, that has been so detrimental to children in terms of autism and learning difficulties. And, you know,
and
please help me in Ireland.
And miscarriages in the pregnant women as well.
Oh, absolutely. It's shocking to see the leaflet I picked up in a hospital waiting room that shows a pregnant mother, and it's telling her to get the flu vaccine to protect herself and her child. And I'm like, how can they do that? You know, they're so, so off the wall with that. So, you know, but as I say, in Ireland, parents still make those choices. And that is what, you know, that's one of the many things that are at stake.
Well, I've been interviewing a couple of child's rights activists. And the stories that they are telling me, I'm sure you're aware, are quite horrifying in terms of children being confiscated without cause, just without cause.
That's right. You have forced adoption, that's going to happen. Because then your government is going to become an agency, and so they're going to look for the bright, the pretty, the healthy children that, you know, to give to people they have selected as suitable parents.
Well, this couldn't be more horrifying, especially in light of the secrecy of the court system and the fact that the parents are given gag orders and cannot, when their child is taken, they cannot then speak about it. So they have protected this agenda. They've protected themselves. They have not at all protected the children.
Well, that's right, but that's what it's about. It's about control of the future by controlling children and childhood. And that's what it's about. And in Ireland, we have great protection in our Constitution. However, as you say, in the secret courts, that doesn't hold much sway. And no public opinion can get behind the situation because parents can't say anything. You know, they'll never see their children again if they say something. And as you're very right, when you go to somewhere like England, you know, it's much worse because they do have forced adoption there and child confiscation on a wide scale. But, you know, it all boils down at the end of the day to a complete disregard of the natural bond, and that people don't realize the natural bond is nature's protection for children. Our God-given protection for children is the bond. And there's a lot of, you know, there's interesting research that more and more that's coming out about how strong this bond is even before birth. You know, we all know about this wonderful bonding time of mother and baby at birth. But apparently the bond is already significant by the time of the birth. So, you know, this cannot be replaced. And this is the child's protection, is that bond. And so rather than taking children and parents and separating them and also separating them from siblings and grandparents and aunts and uncles and everybody that they would have a potential attachment to, bond with, the idea is to, you know, bring them to the highest bidder in whichever type of bidding, you know, the most PC couple, single, you know, wealthiest, whoever, would get a child which they have no bond whatsoever with. And there will always be times when a child needs to have another set of parents. Their parents die or for whatever reason, their mother and father make a firm decision that they just cannot take care of this child. And then adoption is, you know, a real blessing. But we don't,
right,
we don't turn that into a systematic answer because it you know, it has the disadvantage of not having the natural bond. And, you know, and that's a significant thing that, you know, adopted parents really have to struggle to achieve. And, you know, we don't make light of that. And many do it very successfully, but it's not something that we should make light of as if it's the bond is disposable.
Well, here in the United States, the House has just passed, the Congress has just passed the Adoption Incentives Reauthorization, H.R. 3205. And while we are speaking of this, I am going to ask everyone in America who is listening to please oppose at the Senate Finance Committee and to your own senator, H.R. 3205, to oppose monetary incentives to remove children from their family.
Oh, well, that would be disastrous. I mean, that is one of the problems in England, is that, you know, social workers, you know, there's an advantage to doing this, to, you know, to confiscating children and having them adopted. That would be absolutely dreadful. You know, there
well,
should be
the
no
United
motive
States.
Other than generosity and love that
well,
motivates an adoption.
To permanently remove a child in the United States, a CPS worker will receive $4,000. To permanently remove a disabled child, $6,000. And we are talking
wow.
about vaccine-injured children. And obviously the group that I work with is very concerned about CPS showing up at their doors.
Absolutely, absolutely. Oh, that is, I mean, that's a no-brainer that would be abused. You know, you've got a mortgage and you're in a position to earn this extra cash and, you know, you want to keep the roof over your head. And, you know, if you can adopt out a child every month, your mortgage is covered. That is an absolute no-brainer.
Kathy, you are such a heroine. You and Joanna Jordan and everyone who's working with you, you are literally standing between child stealing or not child stealing by the state. The work you are doing, I have no words to say how much I respect you.
Well, look, the main thing is that at the end of the day, we you know, really ensure that referendums will be fair, because it's also a referenda case. I mean, it's primarily a referenda case, to ensure that referendums. And then at the end of the day, once we can have a fair referendum, we still have to ensure that the Irish people understand the issue, because Irish people will not vote for child confiscation. But if they only knew, that's what they're being asked to vote for. It's the fact that they don't know that is so frustrating. And
oh,
so
yes.
I would
very
like to take my hat off to you for, you know, alerting people to these issues.
Well, I have to say that our Senate voted against the rights of disabled people, which likewise take away the rights of disabled people and families of disabled people. But don't you know that what do they call that here in the States? The UN treaty has come up again.
Oh.
So the Senate voted it down, and that was our one blessing that year in 2012 or 13? But
yeah.
I think it was 2012, but it's back. They don't give up. And likewise, with this scenario, you will be asked to vote again on the same issue.
Well, that's it. And, you know, at least in this case, it's the citizens that have blown the whistle and said, you know, in this case, you cheated and the result is not reliable. But the other times we had to vote again were because we gave a result they didn't like. You know, and it was the government made us vote again, you know, on the European treaties and divorce as well. You know, three times we've been told to vote again because they didn't like our answer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
well,
a real
say, everybody
power.
Everybody take a picture with your cell phone of your vote, and that'll be your receipt, because nobody gets a receipt for their vote. And you are able to show that you have voted, you know, and they make it child rights. So you think by voting yes for child rights, you're doing the right thing. But now they are compelled, because of what you are doing, if you do prevail,
they will be compelled to allow you to present an opposing view of quote-unquote child rights.
Well, please God, yeah, hopefully that's the way it will work out. And hopefully, because I found in the first time there was very little debate. A lot of yes posters, everybody associating, if you love children, you vote for children's rights, which of course is rubbish. If you love children, you keep them away from these so-called children's rights because they're not rights at all. But there were very few, you know, there was just the bare minimum of television debates, radio coverage, etc., on this issue, and there was no real no campaign because it was all done very quickly. So, you know, hopefully when we get a second chance, we will take it and we will really run with it, as we should.
Now, Kathy, I have another guest following you who's on the line. She's going to talk about a child who is 3 years old, received the flu mist, and died. So this is very important in regard to educating our health committee at the New York City Council and the mayor, because we don't have much time. We have until tomorrow, till everyone goes on break. So this is a very important interview.
Well, listen, I'll get off, but I'll just tell you quickly before you go that we had that experience here, that my son, who has disabilities from vaccination, was given his only flu vaccine, and he became so sick that and it started him on a downward spiral, so that over 2 years he wound up being on wheelchair bound. And it has taken us years to kind of come back from that.
So and how old was he when this was?
He was 20 years old when it happened, and it really was. It really was almost 5 years before he was even beginning to come back from it, having gone.
Well,
was he
given the flu mist or the flu injection?
It was an injection.
Okay. Now you said your son had a case that was a landmark case. Is this the son that referring to?
That was for education. That was for the right to
okay.
education.
Well, I will
and
definitely
around,
interview you about that. At another time.
Yeah, but it was
a very definite
reaction to the flu vaccine because he had been in very good shape. He got his, as I say, the only flu vaccine of his life, and by the next morning, he couldn't even lift his head off the pillow. So be warned. It's dangerous. It's
okay,
dangerous
now,
stuff. So you better
me.
Get to your other
Kathy.
Guest.
No, yes. Stay with me. Since this is so relevant and you are this lady is reporting on behalf of a family who is grief-stricken right now and cannot report themselves. So stay on and feel free to ask this lady questions. She's very educated. Her name is Tara Bresner Norman, and she runs a group on Facebook called Great Mothers Questioning Vaccines. And she's reporting this story for the benefit of our mayor and our health committee and our health department. So please stay with us, Kathy.
Okay.
I'm picking her up now, I hope.
Okay.
Hi, I'm here.
Hi, Tara. I'm on with Kathy Sinnott. I don't know if you realize that Kathy's son at the age of 20 was devastated by a flu vaccine. So I'm asked her to stay on with us and perhaps ask you some relevant questions that I might miss.
Okay, great. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Let me give you the basics from what I know from the story. A healthy, beautiful 3-year-old boy, the mother dutifully took him in for his flu mist, and within 48 hours he was dead.
Wow.
The only thing that they really noticed was he kept getting more and more tired. Like nothing horrific happened. Nothing. You know, really obvious. He just started getting more and more lethargic, and by the next day, the nanny, he wouldn't wake up from his nap, and he was foaming at the mouth.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, the gorgeous little 3-year-old, sweet little thing ever, and this is my friend's nephew.
Oh, my goodness. Dreadful.
It is
just so
dreadful. Well, Kathy, what has happened here is that the mayor has mandated Mayor Bloomberg has mandated 6 months to 5 years old get a flu shot annually. And I've interviewed a mother of a 5-year-old child who has a muscle wasting disease. I've interviewed another gentleman whose friend's child died in excruciating pain after the flu shot with zero white blood cells. You are now telling us about your 20-year-old son who has had a very serious reaction from the flu shot. It has taken him 5 years on the road to recovery.
Well,
and,
if he ever recovered fully. Yeah, that's right. No. They're very dangerous, and they, you know, we heard a lot about thimerosal in terms of the baby vaccines, but the flu vaccine has thimerosal. You know, they always have thimerosal in them, and that means we're injecting, you're saying, six-month-olds. That's very, very, very young. I mean, it's very young. It doesn't matter what age you are, thimerosal is bad for you, but to think that you would do this to a six-month-old is just, you know, malpractice.
Well, a friend of mine, Jill Southgate, sent me the insert to a flu vaccine that said that there are no known benefits through the age of 4 for a flu vaccine. There are no known benefits, and the CDC has come out apologizing that this year's flu vaccine doesn't work. And still, these mandates have not been lifted.
Yeah. Well, you know, that happens every year with the flu vaccine because they are looking at the year before. They're looking at the flu from the year before and making a vaccine for that, and it never matches the new flu.
I don't even
viruses in this year's vaccine, 4 strains of viruses.
Oh, yeah.
Try to match it. I really don't. I don't think they think anything of it. I think they dump some stuff in there. I'm sorry to sound so cynical, but I don't think they care enough to match anything. I think they just want to sell Tamiflu.
That's right.
I don't want to be that cynical, but, I mean, I've really been looking into it. It doesn't seem like there's any rhyme or reason for anything they do.
How could you not be cynical? This is a sin they are committing.
Joke, is what I think. Do you know that other countries laugh at the United States for our flu shot thing? Like how we are about the flu mist and the flu shot? They literally think we are like the joke of the world, like how easy we just line up for things. I'm embarrassed.
Right.
And, true. It's crazy, but when you hear of a story like that little baby, that's just, and that is the bottom line. And they will see that as just collateral damage, as, you know.
Doesn't have their baby for Christmas, Thanksgiving. Like, it's the most painful thing. And the mother works in a hospital. She has to keep her mouth shut and go back and, you know, in the hospital and act like, you know, it's still okay for everybody. It's the most painful thing.
And
I can't even tell you.
Yeah, and it's not okay. But here's the thing. If they're going to mandate this, are they mandating all vaccines? Or what other vaccines are they mandating?
Well, in California, I believe that they are mandating the HPV. I think that's HR.
They're mandating the HPV in California? Allowing it without parental consent. I didn't know they were mandating.
Oh, is that it? Is that it? HR-499 or whatever that is, 499.
AB4 something or other.
Yeah, you give a child the lollipop. This is the time tested thing.
No, they're giving them. You can win an iPad. I think you can win an iPad if you get all 3 shots.
Oh my goodness.
Oh,
that's what I heard. Don't mark my words. That was one of the things for one of the campaigns they're having. It's the most disgusting thing. I'm living in the twilight zone here.
Well, I covered the mandated flu shots for the healthcare workers in 2009, and the woman who was leading that charge said that in her hospital they were offering luggage tests if you take the flu shot. Then they were offering ice cream if you take the flu shot. Eventually, they were offering you to keep your job if you took the flu shot.
Yeah, well, that's what it gets down to, you know. Well, you do it or else.
You know what? When I'm angry at my husband, I always go tell him to go get a flu shot. That's what I think of the flu shot.
Well,
I mean,
yeah,
it's,
exactly.
It's the biggest joke known to man is that stupid flu shot. Was it ever? Was there
joke.
Ever a good reason for it?
No,
no
I, there never has been. It's a weapon.
I mean, I'm thinking
it's
years ago, maybe years
weapon.
Ago, they thought it was a good idea. Please tell me that at least came from well-meaning people, and then it just stuck, even though, you know.
The Spanish flu. The Spanish flu started with the vaccine and, you know, the 1-2 punch, and then they came in with the aspirin. This is, we have forgotten our history. We wiped out between
That's
20
right.
and 50 million
and
people
they,
with the Spanish flu vaccine.
Wait,
That's
but I thought
right.
that was
and
a bunch
know,
of soldiers who were getting mass vaccinated for, like, typhoid and all these things at the same time, but then they blamed it on the flu. But it was really a bunch of soldiers who were, like, getting like, a zillion things to know what
well,
was
yeah,
happening.
And they
the
said
typhoid
said,
mixed in and cholera and all these things.
That's right. And
wrong?
They said it was because of, you know, that they had been in the trenches and everything. But, in fact, all the first deaths were in army disembarking camps in America, in Kansas. So, you know, they hadn't even been to the trenches, the first ones that died of the Spanish flu. And, you know, when you think of even how they made vaccines back in those days, they just
took
calves. Yeah, they would take calves, lacerate them, then rub into their and put their heads in crushes so they couldn't lick their sores, then put the diseases, pus from diseases and things into the calves' sores. Then several days later, when the calves were feverish, sick, covered in puffy sores, they would then scrape all of that into a big vat, strain it out, and inject the soldiers.
And it was
That's
magically delicious. Mmm, yum.
Yes, and the first deaths were all soldiers that hadn't been at the trenches yet. And then, of course, when World War One ended and everybody came home, it wasn't that the soldiers brought the sickness with them, except that in the different countries, they had all this vaccine they had made, and then the war had ended too early. So, you know, they don't like to waste anything. So they told all the citizens that they should get the vaccine and so that they would have a happy homecoming with their soldiers. And, you know, so that they would be well when the soldiers came home. So people would do that. And there were whole, like I know an old person in Ireland, and his father remembers 7 coffins coming out of the house next door from the Spanish lady. And the only country in Europe that didn't have deaths from Spanish ladies was Greece, and they didn't use the vaccine. They didn't use it on their citizens, and they didn't use it on their soldiers. And they were unaffected by the Spanish lady.
And the Spanish lady being the Spanish flu. Oh, boy.
The Spanish flu. Well, they called her they called it the Spanish lady. Yes.
So everything's wow. given a peculiar name. The fact that these bioweapons are being administered with a pat and a smile. How ludicrous.
Oh, yes. That's it.
And the doctors
like
are the only
right
ones who
anything,
don't know.
Yes.
The doctors are the
it's
only
like,
ones who don't know, and the legislators are the only ones who don't know. But they know the ingredients,
well,
they know the diseases that result, and they know the intent. And yet they don't know.
Well, it's because sometimes you can't afford to know. Sometimes it's worth your whole career if you knew.
That, you know what, I really try to think, what would I do if I were a doctor and I realized everything I invested for, you know, very well-meaning reasons, and then I find out, you know, they call it cognitive dissonance, you know? You can't allow yourself to take in the new information. Like, it's just, like, you can't. Plus, their livelihood. I like to think some of them are just honest people who just, it's too painful to absorb what they've really done.
Right, yeah. But now it's happening.
I remember a GP coming to see Jamie a number of years ago. It was just an inspection or something. And she told me, she was a widow, and she told me that she had stopped doing her GP practice. She was just doing jobs like this she had stopped vaccinating. Said, I know that I have sent 3 children into autism. And, you know, she just, once she saw it happen the first time, she thought it was a coincidence. When the second and third time, she knew what had happened, and she then ceased vaccinating.
Oh, thank goodness. Oh, praise the Lord that somebody has decided to do the right thing. You know, the CDC whistleblower who has come out 13 or 14 years since this falsified report was made that he was a party to, he knew shame. How many millions of children have fallen from the MMR vaccine with autism for someone to know shame? How many doctors, which side of history did the doctors and nurses want to be on? They really have to ask themselves. Because one way or another, this information
good.
Will
I like
come
how
out.
You said that. Which side of history did they want to be on? Good. I like that, Sally.
Well, Jeffrey Jackson had written an article that said doctors and nurses are the tipping point of the vaccine fraud. And I thought the bottom line is, which side of history do you want to be on?
Yep.
So now that the nurses are being told to take vaccines, they're speaking out. And the doctors, I understand, are not being forced to. And no doubt they're doing that.
Really?
You know, yeah, this is what I'm to understand. That's correct. Also, the teachers, I just read that I was talking to a teacher who teaches special ed. And she was saying, well, I don't know if it's the vaccine. And I remember coming home and seeing that teachers were now being mandated to take the vaccine at specific schools. And I thought, boy, if she knows that, perhaps she'll rethink all her special ed students. Now, it might be her next.
Well, I have a special ed teacher friend that I work with in the summer, and I say friend in quotes because she hates me because of my post. And then I'm spreading misinformation, and it's wrong, and she really believes it. She really believes that I'm spread, and I'm thinking,
yeah,
because she has done
well,
no research.
Well, she's married to, you know, a nurse, and she really believes that I am spreading awful information. And on every other level, we are friends, but it's like I make her teeth itch now.
What I tell people is you will either do the research or we will not have anything left to say. You know, this is a decade old disease. Edit your brainwashed. But if you don't do the research, if you don't have children, I have no time for you. If you have children, I will spend 3 weeks, 24 hours a day with you. But if you have no children, there are too many kids I need to save. I don't have time for this.
Is the flu even that bad? Everyone's crying about the flu right now. Am I just being insensitive? I had the flu a few times before. Yeah, you're sick in bed for like a week, and it sucks. I don't know. Am I wrong?
Well, the woman
I interviewed,
whose child missed 2 years of school from a muscle wasting disease, said, "I wish my child had merely gotten the flu. That would have been a happy day for me, knowing what the flu vaccine has caused her." And Kathy, please be specific, if you will, in regard to, I know you said it, but I didn't get the full on, in terms of how your son suffered post-vaccination with the flu shot.
Oh, God.
Oh, well, first of all, I'd like to say, the advantage of flu is that it's a challenge to the immune system, you get it. But your immune system, when you're better from the flu, your immune system is stronger, especially children. You know, the reason that older people, you know, say 50s and 60s, don't get flu very much is because they've already had it. And they've developed immunity to whole families of viruses. Now, the people who are endangered by flu are people who are weaker, you know, very elderly or who have pre-existing conditions or who are very young. But they're the very same people that are most at threat from the vaccination. So
yep.
It's not
but
an
don't
answer
we need to
vaccinate
protect
them.
Those people?
We need to protect those people.
I'm just
and the
kidding.
Way you protect them.
I'm totally
no,
kidding.
No, but the way you protect them is to make sure that you build up their immune system. They have enough heat. They have good food. They have enough rest. And when they're sick, they have plenty to drink and they
keep
know,
them
go
out
to
of public places.
And,
if my immune system or my child's was that bad, I'm not going to bring them to the mall and then blame it on all the people at the mall. Keep them away.
Vitamin,
your
that's
immune
right.
system.
And if polio, your if your child's and if your child's immune system is that bad, you're not going to inject them with a vaccination because that would be deadly. But here's the way it affected him was that he was in pretty good shape. I mean, he has disability, and you know, we were being bombarded constantly with all this radio stuff, and so I thought, well, he's in good shape. We'll keep him that way. And against my better judgment, I went, got the flu vaccine. He kind of went to bed that night. It was in the evening. He got them. We got home. He kind of went to bed. And the next morning, he had what I could only describe as the worst flu I'd ever seen. And over that winter, that was in October. And here's the thing. The flu hadn't yet hit my town. And he had this terrible flu from the vaccine. You know, nobody can say, well, it was just a coincidence. He happened to get the flu anyway. No, because it didn't come to my town till January, and this was October. And then for the whole next year, he just got flu after flu after flu, just these recurring killer flus, one after the other. And every time he got weaker and weaker and weaker, and eventually, after 2 years, he was down 65 pounds. He's 5 foot five tall. He was 65 pounds.
Oh, my gosh.
He could no longer digest food. The colonoscopy at the time showed that a lot of his gut was just incapable of breaking down, you know, food or absorbing nutrients. And he was starving to death and was using a wheelchair most of the time and having tons of epileptic fits. And so we had to come back from that low point. And, you know, I mean, I would say, are we back from it yet? Well, you know, it certainly affected him for a very, very, very long time.
So the flu, the being wheelchair-bound and epileptic fit, this resulted from the flu shot as well?
Well, he had epilepsy already, but it just exacerbated it. And he was mobile, but he just got so weak that we were having to use a wheelchair a lot of the time by the time, you know, he hit rock bottom.
Well, my father almost died from the flu shot, I have to be honest. He ate very healthy food, fresh fruit, et cetera. He never truly was sick a day in his life. And the one flu shot, and I have never seen anyone sicker than he was. So this, I take this very seriously. And I have to tell you, this three-year-old child who was foaming at the mouth and died, the doctor himself reported this to VAERS, which is so important.
Yes.
Because this means that the background noise, if that could stop, I'd appreciate it. The background noise. You hear the background noise?
I hear it.
Okay.
No. It's nothing here.
Okay,
I
might be coming from the radio.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, this child who died and the doctor reported it to VAERS, Tara told me about. Thank God for that because the parents could be doing time for shaken baby syndrome in jail. Anything
or the
with
nanny,
a syndrome,
yeah.
Anything with the word syndrome is vaccine induced. Like Gulf War.
Because now that all these kids are dying, not just the infants they have, what do they call it? Instead of sudden infant death, they say sudden death of a child. They've got another little acronym for it. But, yeah, the doctor reported it immediately to VAERS. Thank God, because how often does that happen? And I think they just didn't confirm or deny whether it was caused by the vaccine. I don't think the full autopsy's back yet.
Okay. Okay. Well, it just happened. Our prayers for all of the children of Ireland and for Kathy Simmons and Joanna Jordan's efforts to thwart child stealing in Ireland, and our prayers to the family and all the families who will be losing